Welcome to the APA Podcast, where we help one another follow Jesus at home, in our city, and around the world.
This week, the internet decided to go crazy over a challenge or a debate over whether 100 men could overcome a single silverback gorilla. Did anybody follow this debate this week? Some of you did. Some of you, it'll pop up later. What do you think? Could 100 eager men attack and defeat one silverback gorilla, 400 pounds, 1,300 PSI bite? Who do you think would win? Who do you think the gorilla would win? Who thinks the gorilla would win? Who thinks 100 men would win? Who thinks these men are idiots? Like, what are... Who comes up with these things? It's dudes in their dorm room. Like, what do you think? Humans love to test our capacity, even if it's make-believe. And we do that, and we come up with these scenarios. And I had a friend who one summer was tree planting and came home and told us his whole plan for how he would defeat a grizzly bear with his tree planting shovel. And we said, you would have died. There's no way. But we love to kind of consider, what are our limits? What are our abilities? But sometimes we test ourselves, but also life is full of tests. That we get tested regularly, our strength, our ability, our intellect, or our integrity gets tested on a regular basis. And as we jump back into the book of Genesis today, we're going to see this story of a test in the life of Joseph. We've jumped back in, we've had this extended series we've come in and out of in the book of Genesis. We've gone right from the beginning, and we are now in the last section of the book looking at the story of Joseph. But this is what was said to Joseph's great-grandfather, Abraham. In Genesis 12:3, God told him, all the families on earth will be blessed through you. So Abraham and his family became the family of blessing, the group of humans through whom God would work to accomplish his good purposes in the world. And so as you follow successive generations, you see this playing out. Abraham's son was Isaac. Isaac had Jacob, and Jacob had 12 sons, one of whom was Joseph. But the big problem with this family was that they were full of screw-ups, scoundrels, and schemers. And often their activities in the world spread the curse more than it spread God's blessing. They often acted more like the snake in the garden than they did as image bearers of God representing his wise rule in the world. But God has this amazing ability to take even our big screw-ups, our failures, and our schemes and turn them around to accomplish his good purposes in the world. So we introduced this idea last week of God's providence. God's providence means that he is able to wisely guide the course of events toward his good purposes. God takes all things and is able to redirect and guide good things and bad to redirect to the accomplishment of his good purposes in the world. So as we left off in Joseph's story in Genesis 37, we saw that he had been given a couple of dreams that indicated that one day he would rise to a place of rulership and he would rule over his own family. Of course, Joseph's brothers didn't like him. He was the favorite child. He was spoiled. The boys were out working where Joseph was just sent out to be a tattletale and a spy to get his brothers in trouble. So they already didn't like him. And then he told them this story of his dreams. So that really set them off. And they schemed first to kill him, but then they ended up selling him into slavery. And so the last verse of Genesis 37 is repeated at the beginning of Genesis 39 as the story picks up with this. It says, when Joseph was taken to Egypt by the Ishmaelite traders, he was purchased by Potiphar, an Egyptian official. Potiphar was captain of the guard for Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. So here we have Joseph with this dream. He believes that God's going to produce something great in his life. He believes he's going to be a ruler over his own family. But here's this wrench in the gears where there's this disruption in the process of this dream being fulfilled. He's sold as a slave into Egypt. It feels like this is going to disrupt and dismantle any possibility of the dream being fulfilled. And we can feel like this way too, like bad luck happens or a horrible circumstance and it derails the progress of our life. And we feel like, well, maybe then the dream that God gave me, maybe then the trajectory of my life is totally gone astray and it's not going to happen. But we're reminded that God in his providence is able to direct the course of events toward the accomplishment of his good purposes. And so Joseph's life is a case study for this. The difficult events of his life reveal to us God's hand over him. And it doesn't mean that any bad circumstances somehow are good. They're still bad, but God is able to work even in the bad circumstances to bring about good through them. So if we look at the next verse, Genesis 39, verse 2, there's a partner verse at the end of our story, verse 23, that sandwiches this narrative together. So verse 2 says, "The Lord was with Joseph, so he succeeded in everything he did as he served in the home of his Egyptian master." Verse 23, "The Lord was with Joseph and caused everything he did to succeed." The Lord was with Joseph. In his difficult circumstance, in slavery, in difficulty, in his quote-unquote bad luck, he was with him. This is the key to the story of Joseph. It's the key to the story of your life. It's the key to the story of the church and how God's providence works. He is with us. Put your name in Joseph's place. The Lord was with Dave. The Lord was with Rebecca. The Lord is with you. Now, you and I are the readers of this text many, many generations later. And so we get the hindsight of the story. We get the curated version of this story. We get to see behind the scenes. But Joseph was in the story. He doesn't have the narrator speaking in his ear, "The Lord is with you, Joseph." He's just a slave. We get to see it. Joseph just has to trust that it's true in the midst of the process. You and I need to learn to trust each and every day, each and every moment, that the Lord is with us. The narrator isn't always going to be speaking into your ear to remind you. It's easy, like in Joseph's circumstance, when his brothers betrayed him, threw him in a pit, then sold him into slavery, it would be easy to assume for him the Lord was not with him. It would be easy to assume for him the Lord had lost track of him or had given up on him. But for you and I, we need to remember that the circumstances of our life do not always reveal the truth about God's presence in our lives. They don't even reveal how God feels about us at any given time. Many people think, well, if my circumstances are bad, it must mean that I've done something bad or that God is upset with me. Or on the other hand, many people are deceived into believing if my circumstances are good, then I must have done something good and God must be pleased with me. But both of those can be a lie and a deception. And the second one is especially dangerous as an assumption. We'll see in Joseph's life that the terrible circumstances he went through weren't his fault. And they're actually a result of him living a life that is pleasing to God, not a life that is displeasing to God. And then we'll see how God turns it around in his providence. Let's keep reading. Verse 3. Potiphar noticed this and realized that the Lord was with Joseph, giving him success in everything he did. This pleased Potiphar, so he soon made Joseph his personal attendant. He put him in charge of his entire household and everything he owned. From the day Joseph was put in charge of his master's household and property, the Lord began to bless Potiphar's household for Joseph's sake. All his household affairs ran smoothly, and his crops and livestock flourished. So Potiphar gave Joseph complete administrative responsibility over everything he owned. With Joseph there, he didn't worry about a thing except what kind of food to eat. So remember the promise to Abraham. I will bless all the families of the earth through you. I will bless those who bless you, curse those who curse you. You will be a blessing to all nations. That was the promise. So here's Joseph, the man of blessing, who's in a household of someone of the nations, and the household is being blessed. Potiphar notices this. Joseph is living out the promise that God gave to Abraham. He's being a blessing to the nations. So what this is doing is it's actually setting up Joseph as the ideal human being. Joseph is the image bearer of God. That's what it started like in Genesis 1. God created humans as his image bearers, his representatives, through whom the rest of creation would be blessed. Here's Joseph, the image bearer of God, the man of blessing, being a blessing to the nations. So this was God's whole intention. And Joseph was beginning to fulfill the calling of his dream. He had become the ruler of Potiphar's house. He was beginning to live out the exact thing the dream had said. This is what the image of God does according to Genesis 1. We're told he will make humans in his own image and they will rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air. We are to go out as God's stewards, his vice regents, his representatives to the world. The world should be reminded of God's wise and gracious rule through his image bearers. This is what Joseph is doing. So let's finish the text all the way to verse 23. It's a longer section. Stick with me. Joseph was a very handsome and well-built young man. And Potiphar's wife soon began to look at him lustfully. "Come and sleep with me," she demanded. But Joseph refused. "Look," he told her, "my master trusts me with everything in his entire household. No one here has more authority than I do. He has held back nothing from me except you because you are his wife. How could I do such a wicked thing? It would be a great sin against God." She kept putting pressure on Joseph day after day, but he refused to sleep with her and he kept out of her way as much as possible. One day, however, no one else was around when he went in to do his work. She came and grabbed him by his cloak, demanding, "Come on, sleep with me." Joseph tore himself away, but he left his cloak in her hand as he ran from the house. When she saw that she was holding his cloak and he had fled, she called out to her servants. Soon all the men came running. "Look," she said, "my husband has brought this Hebrew slave here to make fools of us. He came into my room to rape me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream, he ran outside and got away, but he left his cloak behind with me." She kept the cloak with her until her husband came home. Then she told him her story. "That Hebrew slave you've brought into our house tried to come in and fool around with me," she said. "But when I screamed, he ran outside, leaving his cloak with me." Potiphar was furious when he heard his wife's story about how Joseph had treated her. So he took Joseph and threw him into the prison where the king's prisoners were held, and there he remained. But the Lord was with Joseph in the prison and showed him his faithful love. And the Lord made Joseph a favorite with the prison warden. Before long, the warden put Joseph in charge of all the other prisoners and over everything that happened in the prison. The warden had no more worries because Joseph took care of everything. The Lord was with him and caused everything he did to succeed. So here's the story. We've read it now. Joseph is this handsome, well-built, talented young man, and Potiphar's wife begins to notice him and start to think lustfully about him and begins to invite him into a relationship with her, into sleep with him, and he refuses. He's acting in integrity. He's saying no, but it's not just one time and then she respects his answer. She just keeps every single day trying to forcefully convince him to sleep with her. And eventually it gets so forceful, she grabs his cloak, he has to run off. We assume he was naked, running out of the house, or some sort of Egyptian underwear, he's leaving, and she's got the cloak and she uses it as evidence against him, much like her brothers did when they used it as evidence that he had died, and she accuses him of trying to rape her. So Potiphar throws him in prison. So it's gone from bad to worse. Like, your brothers betray you, sell you into slavery, you're a slave in the home. Fortunately, you rise to the top and the most comfortable position possible for where you are, but then now you're going to prison. It's gotten so much worse. Now, it's a pretty self-explanatory story in some ways. There's plenty of lessons to learn on the surface of this story. There's a great example here of how to walk in integrity. There's great practical advice on how to resist temptation. Sometimes you just have to run away, get yourself out of the environment. There's some principles here on being an excellent employee. And all of these are helpful lessons in the story, but there's actually a ton more going on as well. If you've been following throughout this series, in the first three series we did, we've talked about the fact that Genesis sets up these narrative patterns and like overlaying image on image to continue to upload information to the story as you go along. And some of the most important wisdom that's discovered in the book isn't just the surface level lessons, but the information that comes through understanding the narrative patterns that are being written into the story. So let me remind you of one of the most prominent narrative patterns in the book of Genesis. It's right from the beginning when Adam and Eve failed their test and their temptation in the garden. So Adam and Eve, they are tempted by the serpent who comes to deceive. And the fruit was the source of temptation. The fruit was the one thing, that one tree that God had held back. Everything else was theirs. Remember what the text said about the fruit in chapter 3, verse 6. Eve saw that the tree was beautiful and the fruit looked delicious, and she wanted the wisdom it would give her, so she took some of the fruit and ate it. So this formula that repeats over and over again through Genesis is this idea of humans seeing something that looks good and taking it apart from God's wisdom. Eve saw the fruit, it looked good, and she took it. And that repeats over and over again. And what that does is actually is a clue to the reader that we're seeing someone sin. There's a fall narrative occurring. It's kind of like how a modern movie might use the music score to tell us that maybe an evil character is arriving. And so I don't know if you know what day it is today. It's May the 4th today. May the 4th be with you. It's Star Wars Day. And so in light of that, think about the Star Wars movies. When you start to hear, dun, 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 what is it telling you? Darth Vader is showing up, right? Or one of the big star. Like, it's the sign that the Empire is arriving. So similarly, this narrative pattern of see and take is like the music score of Genesis saying something bad is happening. Humans are about to, or there's a test that is occurring. Will the humans pass the test? So here's the pattern. Joseph in the story is noticed by Potiphar's wife. He's good to look at. He looks good, and so she tries to take him. Joseph here is representing as the image bearer of God. He's the ideal human put on God's earth to represent him and rule. But like Adam and Eve, the next thing you would expect when an image bearer is placed in a position of rulership, the next thing you expect is a test. Will he pass? Now, maybe you don't care about these details, but I find this fascinating how this scene plays on the imagery of Genesis 3. Potiphar's house here represents a new garden where humans rule. Potiphar, in a way, represents God. He's the master of the house who shows up after a sin takes place to pronounce judgment. Joseph represents the image bearer, but also the fruit. He's the one that looks good, and the woman is tempted by him. Potiphar's wife is like Eve, who's being tempted by Joseph, but she's also the serpent who's spinning the deceptive story. Is everyone following along? Because here's what's really fascinating. In the garden, when Adam and Eve failed the test, they experienced God's judgment. They became aware of their nakedness as Joseph ran out of the house naked, and they were cast out of the garden. It was their failure. This is important. It was Adam and Eve's failure that resulted in their descent into a worse situation and a worse status. Presumably, if they had overcome the test, if they had passed through the temptation and came out the other side with their integrity, they may have experienced greater blessing or maybe even expanded their rule in God's creation. But here in the garden that is Potiphar's house, the very opposite thing happened. Joseph, the image bearer, did not give in to temptation like Adam and Eve. He maintained his integrity. He did not sin against his master. He passed the test, and yet he experienced judgment. He was cast out. He was exiled. We're told he was sent out naked. His cloak was left in the grip of Potiphar's wife. The result of passing the test was his descent into a worse state than before. How do we explain this reverse in experience? Here's the deal. When everything in this world is working like it should, passing a test should lead to an improved status. Any college and university students in the room? Some have gone home from... You're literally in the third row, Dakota. Oh, you are done. You graduated. So you're a great example. When you passed your tests in your fourth year, what happened? You got your degree. Your status improved, right? Presumably, if you would have failed, you'd had to do your classes again. But wouldn't it be weird, Dakota, if by passing, the school sent you to jail? That would be weird, right? So normally, when things are working the way they should, you should improve your status when you pass a test. But Joseph, in passing the test, lost his status. In a world that isn't working like it should, a lot of things like this are backwards. This world, sometimes the best way to improve your status in this world is actually to lie, to cheat, to cut corners, to do the wrong thing. There are people in this world like Potiphar's wife who will pressure you to lose your integrity so that you can maintain or improve your status. When you give in, you're rewarded. And if you don't give in, you're punished. Sometimes our descent to a lower status or our lack of blessing is because of our righteousness. It's one of the many symptoms of a fallen world. And when you have a calling on your life, when you are walking through life as a bearer of God's image, a person of blessing, you will be tested. It's a regular rhythm of life, and the Bible is super honest about this. The Bible uses language like testing, trials, temptations, and sometimes those are synonymous for the same thing. Sometimes the Bible tells us that tests and trials come from our spiritual enemy, the devil. Sometimes the Bible tells us that tests and trials, not temptation, but tests and trials come from God himself because he's trying to see where we're at and produce something in us. Other times we just get tested because the world is broken and hard and that life is difficult. But we're not actually told to go on a witch hunt to figure out who's the source and where this stuff is coming from. The Bible just tells us to view these things as an opportunity for development. Like Hebrews chapter 12, verse 7 says, endure hardship as discipline. Whatever the hardship is, see it as an opportunity to partner with God's providence to produce something in you that makes you more capable to be a person of blessing in a broken world. The book of James actually tells us to count it a joy when we face trials of various kinds, not because the trial is joyful in and of itself, but because of what it can produce in us so that we can become a greater type of person of blessing. God is producing people of blessing in this world, and he will allow tests in our life to help make that production happen. So Joseph likely knew that he was risking his status. Why didn't he give in? Joseph had no idea that his life could possibly... Joseph would have assumed that the only possible thing was his life getting worse. The only way to maintain his status would have been to give in to the temptation of Potiphar's wife. But he maintained his integrity. Why? Because Joseph trusted that God was with him. That's the only explanation. Joseph believed in the providence of God. That's the only way he could have maintained his integrity in this situation. He was cast into jail. He faced judgment, even though he was innocent of a crime, where once again in jail, we read God was with him. The Genesis story plays with the idea of up and down. Joseph was the favorite son. His status was high. And then he went to go visit his brothers, and they threw him down into a pit. And then they sold him and he went down to Egypt. And he went into Potiphar's house and he went up to the highest status in the home. And then he went down into the prison. See, Joseph keeps going down and down and down. But at the moment when he trusts God, that's when his fortunes turn and he goes up. It is God who elevates Joseph's status even in these deep down pits. Jesus is presented in the New Testament as the ideal human, sinless, perfect, the very image of God. All of the fullness of God dwelt in him, anointed to rule and reign over all creation. And of course, what does that mean? He faced a test. He faced temptations. He faced temptations directly from the devil who said, bow down to me and I'll give you all the kingdoms of the world. He faced the temptation to come down off the cross and show those sinners who really was boss. But Jesus passed the test. And in passing the test, what happened? He faced judgment and was cast down further and further, further than anyone has ever gone, with nothing but trust in his Father. Philippians 2, starting in verse 8, says, being found in appearance as a man, Jesus humbled himself by becoming obedient to death. It was Jesus' obedience, his righteousness, his faithfulness, his integrity that led him to the depths, even death on a cross. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place. He went down. He was willing to go down, trusting in God to elevate him, and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue acknowledge that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of the Father. You see, Jesus is God in the flesh, but he became the greatest human, the most flawless, perfect version of humanity that anyone could ever be. And it was through his righteousness, through his integrity, through doing everything right, that he faced judgment and was thrown into the pit. But trusting in the providence of his Father, it was God who elevated him. You see, when we're willing to give in to our weakness, when we're willing to give in to temptation, it's a lack of trust in God's providence. When we look at an opportunity and say, if I don't give in to this, if I don't lie, if I don't cheat, if I don't do the wrong thing, I'm going to lose status, I'm going to lose money, I'm going to lose position, I'm going to lose my place in this friend group, my job is going to be at jeopardy, I won't get the promotion, whatever it is, we don't trust God to be the one to elevate us. We trust in the ways of the world. But listen, this is the test we all face, to trust that even if doing the right thing leads us down, it is God who will lift us up. You see, someone who's able with integrity and righteousness to do what is right, like a Joseph and like Jesus, that's the kind of person through whom God can transform the world. That's the kind of person through whom God can multiply blessing, and through Jesus, through whom he was able to save the entire world. And he's still looking today for people of integrity. He's still looking today for people who can be people of blessing, living as image bearers of God in a world that is broken, who are willing, even if they have to suffer for doing the right thing, to trust in God's providence, to elevate them so they can be a person of blessing. So I just want to close with a meditation. Would you just close your eyes with me? I invite you to do that. I'm going to read a scripture, and I want you to think about your own life. Because everybody here goes through different trials, different temptations, different tests. And I imagine that the vast majority of people in this room right now could name the temptation or the test they are going through. You could name it. So just name that in your own heart. The Holy Spirit is here speaking to us. Just start a conversation with God, allowing him to minister to you. And here's the scripture I want to read from 1 Corinthians 10:13. The temptation in your life, they're no different from what others experience. And God is faithful. He will not allow the temptation to be more than you can stand. When you are tempted, he will show you a way out so that you can endure. I want you to meditate on that for a minute. Whatever you're going through, you're not alone. Many others have and are facing the same thing. And God is faithful. He is with you. He's still in control. His providence is real. And he will not let you go through a temptation that you are not able to walk through with integrity and righteousness. He will show you the way out. And if it's like Joseph, where you literally have to run, maybe not literally, if you have to run out of a door naked, you just got to get out of that environment. What door is God opening for you to run through so you can maintain the integrity, even if that means a descent, but trusting in God to elevate you to once again be a person of blessing wherever he sends you.
Thank you for listening to the APA podcast. We hope it helps you better follow Jesus in your home, city, and around the world.